I'm Rudy Jung.
Hello, my name is Joseph David Jones.
Hey, this is Kevin Sussman.
Hey, this is Amina Massoud.
I'm John Rhys Davis, and you're listening to Script to Screen.
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 Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Script to Screen. We're almost done with the month of October here. We're almost at our Halloween special, which airs next week. It's going to be a lot of fun. But we've also decided to have panels for today's episode and next week's episode. We're shaking things up, like I said last week. Come the month of November, we're doing another massive shakeup because Script to Screen is going to evolve once more. I know we're keeping you guys on your toes. Hopefully all of our screeners out there aren't exhausted with all of our changes. But hey, 2020 has, if 2020 has taught us anything, it's that transformation is the real game. It's adaptability. and Script to Screen has to keep adapting. But those decisions aren't being done on my own. I've never been able to make these decisions on my own without the help and support of the one and only Solo to my Chewbacca, the one and only Han Solo.
Good afternoon and good night, wherever you are. I don't know what time is you're listening to the podcast, but hello, hello, hello.
How you doing, Mr. Solo?
Pretty good. How are you? How are things with you? How's the shakeup coming along?
Well, it's exhausting, as it always is. But you know what? I'm excited. I was listening to some of our older episodes. I was listening to the Why We Love Movies episode last night. It made me smile. It made me laugh. And I might be posting it on our IGTV very soon. So all of you screeners, if you're new to the show, you'll get to see this episode that really defined Script to Screen for both me and Had. It's a great panel episode.
That was the one with Clint and Yumna, right?
And Bailey. Yeah, it was the international panel.
Yeah. That was a really good episode.
It was so much fun. It was a celebration of movies. It was a celebration of Script to Screen. It was great. And today's episode is another panel. We've got another lovely young lass with us who loves films, who's not opposed to a Netflix and chill, like I hear, or so I've been told, who's also a big fan of Big Bang Theory. Let's bring her on the show. Sophie, welcome aboard Script to Screen.
Hello, hello, hello. Han Solo, sorry.
Hi, hello.
And Alan, lovely to be here.
Yes, welcome aboard. So, this panel or this round table, as we used to call them on Script to Screen, with everything that's been happening in the film industry and the television industry, I think, and 2020 has really, again, Script to Screen isn't the only thing that's faced a shakeup. I think the film industry in and of itself has faced a shakeup. I think the way we consume content has also faced a shakeup. So this panel is really going to be discussing a lot of that.
I just wanted to jump in, Alan, because
sure.
You mentioned Netflix.
Go ahead.
You mentioned Netflix, and I was reading yesterday something really interesting. I don't know if you guys have come across it yet. But there is about $500,000 being sent or given by Netflix to the Lebanese television and film industry to help freelancers and those to get off their feet. And they're also
Had sent me the article yesterday. He was like, check this out. So it is really on point that we're actually doing this episode right now with this news. It's actually like a blessing in disguise that this news kind of came along while we were talking about this. Sophie, thank you for bringing that up. I think it's a great initiative from Netflix. It's Netflix and AFAC, which is like the Arab Film
the
and
Arab
Arts
Council. Yeah.
Council, yeah.
I think it said by October 29, any freelancers or anybody who would like to pitch for stories or funding, and they can pitch through, as you said, AFAC. I think we got it right. I'm not sure.
I think the applications open on the 26th of October, and it lasts 26th. I think until the beginning of the first week of November. I think there's like this time period for anybody, any filmmaker who was badly affected by the blast, who is now, you know, more unemployed than they were before the blast,
super creative ideas.
Yeah, exactly. This fund is for them. Sophie, you know, I did do a little intro, but you know, before we start digging into the meat of the episode, why don't you just kind of give us a quick breakdown of what makes Sophie tick? Like, who is Sophie, you know?
All right. Sophie, that's a very interesting question. I would like to start by telling everyone I'm a jack of all trades. I don't really have a specific one. I started off as a journalist. I've always been into film, docufilm, to be precise. And then your mention of Netflix and chill, I guess none of us can get away from Netflix in that sense, especially in this part of the world and during COVID-19. And we've all been sort of attached to our screens. And I think, my partner and I have been sitting waiting for the new James Bond episode film to come out, which is still yet to be released.
No time to die.
So, and as you mentioned, I do have a guilty pleasure, and that is Big Bang Theory. And I do rewatch Big Bang Theory episodes. I don't know why. It really makes me laugh. It's extremely witty. I think that's about it. So yes, I'm a journalist by trade. I don't even know how to describe myself. It's very interesting because I love lots of different things, to be honest. I was in politics, then I went into advertising, and now I'm into documentary film. And I think for those listening, it's just follow your heart in the end of the day. And I think this is what Alan and Han Solo do, you know, and I think that's why they started Script to Screen. And it's just do what you're passionate about, get your priorities straight. Alan's been doing that recently.
Yes, I have.
So, yeah, that's all I really have to say to everybody. I think that's my motto. If you want to know me anymore, just go with your heart. Great. Be creative. And that's why I think I brought up the Netflix grant, because I think for all of you that have been sitting at home and have been trying to think of scripts or have been writing, I know Alan and Had Solo have been really creative since you've been in lockdown. So for those who are in lockdown and really want to get a chance to be heard or seen or be creative, I think this is a really cool way. And thank you, Netflix, for giving people that opportunity.
Absolutely. Wow. I mean, that was an awesome little thing that you just did right there, Sophie. Thank you so much for that. I tried, Alan. That was awesome. Speaking of Big Bang Theory, I sent you a picture very recently because I know that you are a fan of Big Bang Theory. Had, we met a little someone at MEFCC earlier this year, didn't we?
Yeah, we met a certain owner of a comic book store from The Big Bang Theory, Mr. Kevin Sussman.
Yes, yes, we did. Yes, we did.
And we had the chance to sit with him and chat with him a little bit. Very, very nice, chill guy. Very close to the character he portrays on the show. He's not.
Yeah, I was just going to say to you, the same question I asked Alan, is what is the character like in real life?
He feels kind of, he's a bit more confident, I'd say, but he does feel similar. He's not very, very different from the character in the show.
There was not a lot of difference there. Okay, so let's jump in and start talking about the topic at hand, which is streaming services, which is sort of like this evolution of what the industry is like. I think, you know, you brought up the article about Netflix, Sophie, and then earlier this week, Disney had a press release about them wanting to shift the majority of their focus to creating content for Disney Plus, which is really scaring movie theaters, I think. But
there's a lot of controversy about this, isn't there, Alan? I mean, there's this whole controversy about transgender, and I don't know what is going on, but it seems to be causing a lot of stir, this whole Disney Channel.
Disney Plus, you mean? What controversy with transgender?
There's something about Mulan that I remember reading this about a couple of weeks ago, that they didn't want to release Mulan, and Mulan was causing a huge stink in America because they were saying that there's a portrayal of transgender, and they don't know if they should be airing that to children.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's so much controversy regarding the Disney Plus channel.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, I didn't hear that controversy. I heard the controversy about them shooting in the location in China that essentially is like the what are they, like the concentration camps where they keep the Muslim population and all that. So there was that controversy. There was a controversy about it being $30 to pay. And now you're telling me there is
a controversy. There was a controversy of the actress being pro China against Hong Kong, the manifestations in Hong Kong. She supported the police. And that also was like this big boycott Mulan movement.
Huge hoo-ha happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, Disney and a lot of other studios, I think, but like Disney has been sort of the center of a lot of like bad press recently. Yeah. Because of all this, it's been downhill.
How do you feel about that, Alan? I mean, knowing we grew up on Disney.
And yeah, well, I mean, now we're
in a stage where we're sitting like picking away at it, or everybody is. And there's this whole generation that are going to be consuming Disney in a completely different way.
That's interesting, because I think it's not just like we all grew up on Disney. Like Had also grew up on Disney. Like we hold the Disney animated films in a place that is very special to
us. To be hearing things like this, it's quite devastating.
It's sad. It's very sad. I don't think Disney has been making the smartest of choices recently. I think not just with their original content, but also with other content, with the other properties that they own. I think they're in a very, very yucky situation. I don't envy the new CEO of Disney right now, because I think Bob Iger did step down, and now it's Bob Chapek who's taking his place. I don't necessarily, and on top of everything with COVID, like all of their theme parks have been shut down, their cruise ships have been shut down. And this is what's really scary for the industry as a whole. But at the same time, and I don't know if Had you agree with me on this, but at the same time, there is a part of me that's like, you know what? I think the industry does need to hit rock bottom to kind of rebuild. I think it's been too comfortable in its own shoes for a very long time, and it's been very passive and thinking that it, like, the audience will come and watch whatever we give them anyway. And I think recently they've been realizing that no we won't. I think we want to, we want you to give us, we want you, and kind of like you said earlier, Had, we want you to stop being lazy, right?
Yeah. Look, I think my issue with laziness comes more from what the studios are providing with in terms of content. I do hope there is a shift in content and more creativity. That's always been my problem. My problem is specifically with reboots, with sequels, with remakes, with whatever you want, prequels, equals, all of that stuff. So I just wanted to think outside the box. Now, is the shift towards, if you want streaming, is it going to change that? I don't know yet. I do notice that there's a lot more focus on televised series than the movies right now. I think everyone is lost. I think, we're lost. And we handle a limited amount of things per day. So imagine the CEO of Disney, with everything he handles, with all the stocks and the money loss and what he has to deal with, it can't be easy. And he has to adapt to the situation, keeping in mind that I think COVID is here to stay for a while. I don't see a solution, at least not for the next 6 to 8 months. So they have to adapt. They have they have to make money. They have employees. They've probably already, I mean, if they close down the theme parks, I don't know how many people have lost their jobs.
Yeah, in the article in the press release, there were a lot of people who were let go. There was there's a business term for it, and I can't. It's completely. Brain fart this morning. It's okay. They've had a lot of people that were let go. They a massive amount of people that were let go. Yeah. There's no guarantee that that's not going to keep going if the situation stays as is.
Did you guys hear that they're going to be opening a Disneyland in London?
Wait, what? When did this happen?
Yeah. Well, I didn't actually get into the nitty gritty of it, but it popped up in one of my feeds. I can't remember which one. But yesterday,
fit a theme park? Isn't it already squeezed as it is?
Honestly, I don't know what they're planning, but it seems to be bloody huge. And I was looking at a 3D render of it yesterday. So going back Had's comments of, how are they going to make money? Well, obviously, this seems to be some new adventure. But just on the topic of it, when we were discussing Netflix and how they're trying to engage freelancers across the world and they're asking for content, shouldn't maybe this be something that Disney takes into consideration, actually engage the population? Wouldn't that be a way to maybe ramp up revenues had?
Look, there's obviously a big difference between Disney and Netflix. I think Netflix takes more risks. And you can see that in the content that they offer.
They've
come up with more original series. I haven't seen anything Disney's done that's actually original. Everything is based on a Marvel property or Star Wars, but I haven't really, I don't know, I haven't seen anything creative. But when it comes to Netflix, most of the shows are originals. If you think about Stranger Things, if you think about, Glow, these are all original shows. And Netflix is, doing what it does best, getting people to come and watch these shows. And in terms of budgeting, I believe it's easier to start like that because they're getting these relatively less known actors, less known directors on these shows. They do have massive projects on the side. I'm not saying they don't, but they're getting these like Stranger Things had the cast of unknowns at first, and the producers.
Yeah. And now it's one of the biggest shows, most popular show in the world.
Everyone knows Millie Bobby Brown. I mean, she's a superstar right now.
Yeah.
So I think they're doing things in a more smart and creative way. And I do believe they have an edge over Disney when it comes to that. I think Disney is a bit redundant.
Maybe it is because they're bringing in the population, you're taking ideas from the world. You're not just trying to hone it in. And as you said, they might get lazy at Disney, or they're overstressed, or they have all of these different considerations that they have to take into place. So by abandoning the population and not using the creativity of those that are out there that could possibly elevate Disney as a whole, I think that is something that they're probably not even tuning into or haven't even considered.
Well, it's not just that, but I think also Netflix is doing something that's very smart, aside from what you said, Sophie, because I do agree that this idea of bringing in different voices and diverse voices and not doing it in a way that feels disingenuine or that feels inorganic. Yeah. It's doing it in a way that feels very organic and very genuine. But what they're doing also, and considering, we're pitting Netflix and Disney kind of against each other in this conversation. In February of this year, Netflix basically said that it plans on releasing several big animated feature films per year, and it's going to start in 2021. And the kicker here is that the majority of the people working on these animated films are ex-Disney employees. They're the veterans of Disney. A lot of them are like part of the golden age of Disney. So a lot of them are the people that worked on the films that we grew up watching. And the first film that Netflix did with this was a film called Klaus, which was released December of 2019. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw this, Sophie. It was a Christmas film, and it was directed by, I think, one of the people that worked on, like, Little Mermaid or something, and it is excellent. It had all the heart that you would expect from a Disney film, but it wasn't a Disney movie. It was absolutely beautiful. And I think if Netflix sticks to this kind of strategy, I think they'll knock Disney. I mean, Disney will never be able to catch up. They just won't.
I have a feeling that they're already lagging. And who is the? I'm sure you guys can highlight more of this, but the creators of Spirited Away, there is
Studio Ghibli.
Miyazaki.
They're coming up quite fast and hard
and
as
I
well.
Think, if I'm not mistaken, I think Netflix they own the rights now. So
yes,
Studio Ghibli is coming directly to Netflix, which is huge. Because that used to be a Disney collaboration, and now it's like out of Disney's hands.
Yep. I think they're losing their clout. And if they don't, as Had said, if they don't start to re-strategize and look at different things, they could find themselves really sort of lagging behind. I don't know what the word is. It's like the last
I think
car,
lagging
you know,
behind
the sweeper
is,
car.
I think, yeah,
the
I think
car.
Lagging behind is perfect.
Yeah. But it's really quite it's upsetting because as we go back to just a couple of minutes ago where we were all saying, you know, we held Disney in such high regard as children, and we sort of relied on Disney until Cartoon Network came about and Nickelodeon came about. But Disney was sort of a pillar in our youth and our upbringing, and it really set the stage for how we approached life or how we approached romantic relationships, you know, all of us in our princess towers, you know, looking for our Romeo, which is a load of beep. But at the end of the day, it did sort of build this world in our heads, which I feel like
it's
just changed so much for the generation that's coming up. They're seeing things and engaging with things in a completely different way to us. They have so much more variety, and Netflix is just giving them even more variety. And I just can't wait to see where this is going to go.
Exactly. Exactly.
And there's one thing I'd like to add. It's that Netflix has more mature content than Disney. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
They have R-rated, they have horror, they have action, they have some erotic stuff.
Lots of erotic stuff, to be honest.
And well, I can't see the erotic version of The Little Mermaid on Disney Plus coming. I mean, that would be
oh my god,
that would be heresy. But yeah, Netflix just offers more, in my opinion. And even they have international shows. They have shows. I watched a show called Into the Night, which is a French/Belgian/Italian. That was really good. It was actually, I finished it. It's six episodes and I binged it. I just watched it.
It's like the thing with the plane, right? It's the thing with the airplane?
It's the thing with the sun. It's the sun that whenever the sun comes out, it kills everyone. So they hijack a plane and it has to keep going west into the night to survive.
Wow. Look at that concept.
That's just
holy crap.
Yeah, and I wouldn't see Disney doing that or acquiring that, because I'm not sure it's produced by Netflix. I think it's a French show acquired by Netflix.
Yeah.
So also acquisition here plays an important role.
Yeah.
Disney has a big portfolio with 20th Century Fox, and I don't think we've seen much of what they can do with that. And again, that's the problem. Acquiring 20th Century Fox,
which is no longer 20th Century Fox. Don't forget, it's now 20th Century Studios, which is even harder to say.
Exactly. Yeah. But the problem is they're going to rely on nostalgia and reboots. Disney is just banking on nostalgia and superhero movies. For me, this is what they've been doing
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Had.
Yeah. And I feel they're going to keep on doing it, and they've been doing it. And look, it's working right now. It's making money. But I think at some point, I mean,
people
you yourself, Alan,
yeah.
you have fatigue of superheroes.
Yeah. Oh, I'm tired of superheroes. I can't do it anymore.
I'm sure a lot of people are like you. So, yeah.
No, yeah, but sucks, flesh out Hadi's point, is that if they're going to consistently recycle and regurgitate, let's say animations from our childhood, how is that even going to resonate with the new generation or that's coming up that don't even have this nostalgic feelings that we're sitting talking about to begin with? They're just judging it on what it is. And if there's other platforms exactly. out there doing better stuff, then they're just going to, as we said, fall off the priority list.
Yeah, I was told, I didn't even know this, but I was told very recently by a very trusted source. I was told very recently that Walt Disney had a plan for the Disney archive. And apparently he had said somewhere, I think, I don't know where exactly he stated this or if it's true or not. But I mean, if this is the case, I'm interested to see what you guys think about this, but apparently what Walt Disney said was that every generation of kids needs to have its own Snow White, its own Sleeping Beauty, its own Cinderella, its own Aladdin, its own whatever, 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 whatever.
Yeah, so moving with the times.
So essentially what Walt Disney wanted was exactly what the Disney company's sort of doing, but I don't think they're doing it right. Like, I think that yes, they need to have their own Snow White, they need to have their own Sleeping Beauty or whatever, but does it have to be exactly that character? Like, couldn't we find new original stories to tell in the same like theme or in the same, like, I don't know, like there had to be a better way to remake these films. Like, maybe just like, you know, uplift them to 4K and re-release them. Like, do they have to be like quote unquote live action remakes that are so bland and flat and don't even have the same emotional relevance that the animated films did?
And I think maybe just what you're saying is it all goes back to this concept of diversity, you know, whether it's in a company or whether it's in the movie industry or whether it's in the creation itself. And I think what you do find, I'm sorry, I don't know how this conversation has turned into Netflix versus Disney Plus, but I think it's a very interesting topic. And I think a lot of people
are going to be interested to know. Yeah, that's why I'm kind of going with it, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine, yeah. But just comparing it to Netflix, if I don't want this to cause any controversy, but I think it's an interesting point to bring up. If you watch episodes of Netflix, you will always find a token person from every sort of angle of life, you know, representations of minority communities, representation of the different type of categories or gender categories that are coming up. You know, they're trying to appeal to the masses in a way, and the masses have changed. The way the discourse in parts of the world has changed. You have people that don't necessarily associate with your Cinderella or your Snow White or any of this sort of association has changed. So if you're going to be regurgitating and recycling old theories and old myths or imagination, which we once had, which has now changed, but you're still trying to make it applicable to the present day. I think this is the biggest question here is if you don't adapt and you don't bring on board the diversity of today's world and include all of these types of characters, you're never, ever going to be able to have any form of grasp or, I don't want to say dominate, but be able to reach and talk to everyone. You're going to get criticism, which they're facing now. You're going to get backlash, which they're facing now. And unfortunately, what they need to realize is that the masses are the ones that are backlashing. And it's the minorities or the ones that maybe do have these nostalgic feelings that aren't necessarily kicking up a fuss. So why are you consistently catering to people like us, let's say, instead of catering to those that are determining this new world order that we're finding ourselves in?
Okay, I have a reply, but Had, do you have something to say first before I jump in?
No, go for it, go for it.
Okay, so here's my take on this, and you know, a little bit of controversy never hurt Script to Screen, so you're good, Sophie, don't worry about it. So here's my take on it.
I know honestly. I'm talking to you, so I thought I'd take my risk.
So here's my take on it. I think it's twofold. Okay. So I don't agree that the people who are, you know, the nostalgic people that Disney is trying to kind of cater to along with the new audience isn't kicking up a fight. No, we're kicking up a fight very much so, because I think that our childhood is slowly being tarnished, and whatever, and you know, we basically said what we held dear, what we held most dear, is somehow being like manipulated to try and fit this new world order, but it's not being done the right way, and it feels very disingenuous, you know. I also think that you know, what I like about Netflix is that I don't think that every show has every single diverse group, but it has enough content to cater to enough diverse groups that if you if you don't like show X or movie X, there's always movie Y or show Y that you will like. And I think this is what's making Netflix succeed, is that it's not trying to shove inclusion or diversity in every single one of its products, but it's shoving it's using inclusion and diversity in different products. Yeah, in its platform. And I think the problem with trying to do too much in one piece of content renders the content hollow and shallow. And this is what a lot of different content, not just Disney, but I think like there's a lot of TV shows that do this on regular, like, you know, on regular television, that have tried to shove diversity and inclusion in their shows, and they've ended up becoming a mockery of themselves, because what you end up with is instead of ending up with like fully fleshed out four-dimensional characters, you end up with cardboard cutouts. And that's even more offensive, I think, to minorities than not having minority characters at all. When you end up with like two-dimensional characters versus fully fleshed out characters. I always use this example of like Grey's Anatomy had a veiled nurse at one point, a veiled intern at one point in their show, who was on the series for like four seasons, never uttered a word. She was just a background character. But hey, Grey's Anatomy had a veiled character. And it's like, no, I'd rather you not have a veiled character than have a veiled character that doesn't even speak. Because I find that even more disgenuine.
It's a little bit insulting, actually, because what, you're floating a culture behind you, but you're not giving anybody any juice or any understanding of what this character is.
Exactly. So I think what Disney has been trying to do is trying to adapt to this. Hey, look, we had a gay couple in Beauty and the Beast. Or like, hey, look, this was a fully fleshed out Chinese, you know, film. And it's like, yeah, but no, you're not doing those right, Disney. Like, you're not, you know, you can't wave that flag if you're sort of throwing spices here and there, but you're not necessarily cooking the meal properly, if you will. I don't know if that metaphor worked, but, you know, you get my drift.
No, it's a bit like a raw diet.
Yeah, exactly. Had anything you want to throw in here?
I want some carrots and cabbage, please.
No, I think you guys have pretty, you know, summed up pretty much everything regarding this topic. There's not much to add to it, but I would have to agree with you, Alan, on what you said. Netflix does cater to a more diverse audience because of the content they have, because they have diverse shows, whereas Disney is trying to force feed us certain things.
Yep, exactly. Even when it comes to nostalgia, Netflix is doing it right, especially now that they own Cobra Kai. Like, because you and I have expressed how much we feel Cobra Kai is like the best representation of nostalgia done in the best way possible.
Oh, absolutely. And I can't wait to see what's coming next.
In store for season three. Yeah, exactly. Sophie, I don't know if you know what Cobra Kai is?
No, I decided to stay pretty quiet on that one.
Cobra Kai is the sequel series to the Karate Kid films. So it brought back the original cast, but with their children. So it's like nostalgia done in the right way. Like, for people who are nostalgic about the Karate Kid, you get to watch it. And for people who haven't seen the Karate Kid, who are just jumping on Cobra Kai, they'll still be able to enjoy it, because it's a brand new story, but it's filled with Easter eggs for the nostalgic people, but it's using its legacy characters in the best way possible, that the, you know, like the new generation and the older generation can both enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show, exactly.
Yeah. And this is, again, this is nostalgia done right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think this was going back to Hadi's point when he was saying, you know, recycling, regurgitating, redoing, and all of that is not necessarily bringing back nostalgia, but like taking something and then giving you an evolution or like a next step or a generational jump, you know, where you can apply what you just said, Alan, in the older generation and the younger generation can meet halfway. I think it's the perfect utopian strategy, if you want to put it in that way.
Exactly. I do want to talk about one thing, Sophie, because you did mention this earlier in the episode, the idea that Netflix is supporting these independent people, independent filmmakers, independent artists, independent content creators. They've always kind of catered to that audience. It does have a more artistic, like there's a lot of more artsy kind of films on Netflix. I mean, yes, they do have their commercial stuff. Yes, they do have their trashy reality TV shows. But again, like we said, it caters to every kind of audience.
Everyone, yeah.
And you as a documentarian, I mean, the amount of documentaries on Netflix and docuseries on Netflix is just insane.
Amazing. Yeah.
And they're so good.
They are so good. You know, we were limited once, where you would sit and wait for a great documentary to come out, or you would sit and watch Discovery Channel, or you would, you know, you had to just sit and wait for something good. And most of the time it seemed to be a load of crap, or the History Channel. And then thank God Vox came out and Vice came out. And, you know, you started to get these really interesting stories from around the world, which you didn't get your hands on before. But again, you know, it was more the internet side of things. They were never on TV, Vox and Vice. You had to go searching for them or follow them. So what Netflix has done is finally brought it to you in an easier way and is giving you great, interesting stories. Like, there are just so many things that are there that just blow my mind. I'm just, wow. Thank you, Netflix, for like bringing this topic up for discussion and give, you know, it's thought-provoking at the same time. So it all goes back to your diversity comment. And if you're not going to be able to have categories or appeal to the masses or appeal to different types of people, you're never going to succeed, especially in today's world, because this individualistic mentality of, you know, I'm unique. It tends to be a thing that people are doing these days. I'm unique. What I have to say is important. And I want to get what I want to say out there. Which is something I think people were scared of before. They used to not value their voice or not value their creativity, or were insecure about sharing their ideas, or were put down by the big conglomerates and told you're dumb, we're better, you know, whether we're Warner Brothers, Universal Studios, you know, we know if you're not in here, you're not part of this crew, this party, you know, and we're not really taking what you say into consideration, which I think Netflix has shown that the value of taking these people's thoughts and creativity into consideration can set you up for something different, something more appealing, something more diverse. And unfortunately, if you're not able to do that, whether you're a person in your daily life with your career or a streaming channel or a TV channel or whatever, I don't think you're going to succeed, because the world has changed, and if you're not willing to move or evolve personally or on a career level, I don't see how that's going to help in any way possible.
And that's exactly why Script to Screen keeps adapting, baby.
Yeah, so for all of those that were listening at the beginning with Alan going, yeah, we've done this and we're doing that, and we're coming and we're changing. Yeah, see, they've got it right, guys. Even if they're testing the water and they're seeing what fails and what doesn't, but at least they're bothering to take that risk and that change and opening them up, maybe opening you up for criticism. But as you said, you know, you need to learn from things. You need to try things. And if you don't, you're just going to be boring.
Exactly. And I think, absolutely, again, I think it goes back to something that you said earlier, Sophie, which is, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're passionate about the thing that you're doing, and if you're passionate about and you believe in what you're doing. And this is something that both Had and I truly do believe in, obviously. But, you know, like, if you're not passionate about it, if you don't believe in it, then you're not going to do the thing that we just discussed, which is try and adapt and try and change and try to see how the thing you love and how the thing you're passionate about can fit into this new world order. Like, how can, in many ways, like, how can, and this is a question that Had and I are basically asking, have been asking ourselves for the past 2 weeks, how can Script to Screen fit into this new world? Like, how can we remain part of the conversation? How can we
relevant.
Continue to celebrate film and be relevant on the show? In this new world that we're living in, because everything has changed. Like, even the conversation about cinema has changed. Like, everything has changed.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you want to take two steps back, you had certain topics that you could discuss. Okay, there were TV shows that had their prime time, you know, set. We know that at 7 o'clock, I'm going to sit down and watch Grey's Anatomy. Wonderful. Okay, then we had the DVDs. Then you had all of these different elements that came up. But we're in a world where content is king. Content is being created in the thousands in 1 hour. You have so much out there, and if you can learn how to use and utilize your resources for your benefit to be able to create a further discussion and a further evolution, that is the only way for me to see this going any way forward. So for Script to Screen to discuss cinema, for example, and then move on to TV shows and now talk about streaming and discussing Netflix and Disney Plus. I mean, this is the only, you're having to talk about the way the world is moving, and it's moving so bloody fast. It's
yes.
moving too fast. Like, it's really hard to catch up, but if you don't catch up, that train has stopped at the platform and it's not going anywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. Had, anything you want to jump in and say?
Look, so much has already been said.
Right. Sophie and I knew this was going to happen. I mean, like, we knew it was going to be like a ping pong, because we've been waiting to have these discussions together. And like, so Script to Screen has become the platform where Sophie and I get to like kind of play ping pong with this. But I can't not like give Hottest a chance to kind of put in his two cents.
Type of the referee, you know, just watching us.
I want to go back to something you said earlier on the show and link it to that when you were talking about Walt Disney saying that every generation deserves their Beauty and the Beast and Snow White and whatnot. Look, they probably do deserve that, but I think Walt Disney also said that in a time where technology wasn't so advanced. He said it, I don't know, like 80 years ago, 100 years ago, whenever he said what he said, it was a while ago. I don't think it applies today.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we're not judging you, Had. We're not judging you.
When you go all silent,
yeah, we're not judging you. We're listening.
Yeah, when you go all silent, I think that it disconnected. So
no, we were listening intently.
Yeah, I have PTSD right now. So he said this at a like, technology is evolving faster than it ever has. Things change every 5 years, every 3 years now, versus they used to change every 10, 15, 20, 30 years even. It took time for things to evolve. But now things are changing. Smartphones are here. People can watch a show on their phone, on their way to work, on a train, in a cab, on an airplane. There's just so much that
there's a larger demand, I think, Had, because as you just said, the consumer is consuming so much faster. So there's this demand for consistently new content. And I think going back to your point of 10 to 15 year timelines, it took an animation triple the time to be made than it is now as well with the new technology.
Yeah, even animation itself has evolved. I mean, mm-hmm. we used to have the hand-drawn cartoons, and now we have the, if you want, the animated Toy Stories and WALL-E and whatnot.
Yeah, so computer animation,
Computer animation, absolutely. So, you know, things are changing and people have to adapt. And Script to Screen does have to adapt. We, you know, now we have COVID. We don't have the luxury of going to movie theaters. We don't have a lot of luxuries we had a year back.
So exactly.
Things are different, and we have to, you know, be responsive. And I mean, we used to talk about a movie release every week because movies were being released every week. Now there are definitely less of that.
Much less of them.
Yeah. Studios are postponing their movies. Studios are streaming their movies, which is what we, you know, initially were supposed to talk about, how Disney wants to release. Not that this is a bad conversation, but just pointing out that, you know, the studios don't know what to do with these properties, and Disney has decided to release most of their movies online. Is that going to be a winning like
Soul,
gamble?
Soul is supposed to be released now in December, the new Pixar film.
Yeah. So is it going to be something that's going to help them win their war against Netflix? I don't think so. I actually don't.
Yeah, because I think, you know, like, not to re-repeat, but I guess it goes back to, it's not about where you're offering what you're offering, but it goes back to something that is at the core. Exactly. It's what are you offering me? It's story, story, story. Are you giving me a good story? Are you giving me good content? Are you keeping my attention? And this is what it is. It's not, you know, a lot of people call this the streaming wars. I don't call this the streaming wars. I call this the attention wars. Where am I going to be paying? Because that's the only currency that really matters right now. Where am I going to be paying my attention? Or who am I going to be paying my attention to? And if you're not relevant, if you're not adapting, and if you're not, you know, catering to your audience, you're going to fade away. That train is going to leave the station.
End of the world. Yep.
Exactly.
Well, guys, I think this sets up a very interesting closure for you guys. So for all of those listening
Sophie's just made a coup. She's like, you know what? I think it's time for us to end the show.
No, I just thought it'd be interesting because Hattie sort of like summed it up and you've just sort of summed it up. And I think it's interesting opportunity for the audience to hear what is the next step for Script to Screen in an interesting little brief without giving too much. Ooh. Where are you guys taking this?
So
I've taken the mic, audience, and I'm putting them on the spot.
Hod, should we tease a little?
Maybe just like a little bit.
Okay. So I think one of the things that Hod and I truly miss, you know, when it came to Script to Screen, when it came to the conversation, the reason why I talked about this episode that we had recorded, it, almost 2-3 years ago, which is the Why We Love Movies roundtable, is because I think what's really lacking nowadays, even more so than when we did this episode, because that was kind of part of the conversation of that episode, is this, it's this celebration of what we love, and it's this celebration of cinema, of the content that we adore. So I think the thing that I can tease, and again, I do want to tease it because it still is in the development stage, and I don't want to jinx it or give it away or promise too much, but I do want to say to our audience, I do want to say to our screeners that the content is going to shift into a more in-depth celebratory conversation, and it's going to focus on, in an indirect way, it's going to focus on why we love what we love, but the theme of it isn't necessarily going to be that per se. It's going to be a little deeper and a little weightier, but also a lot of fun. And our episodes are going to shift away from what seems to be very toxic lately, what seems to be, you know, that headliney news. It's going to slowly shift away from that and focus more on, you know, why we made Script to Screen to begin with, you know?
I love it, Dylan. I love it.
Yeah, I think that's a good enough tease, right, Hod?
It's just us celebrating our love for film, for series, for certain actors,
music,
for certain things in movies.
Movie soundtracks.
Yeah. It's because we love film and we want to celebrate this art. There's just so much shit going on right now in the world that, you know, we don't want to be on board of the caca train. We want to be on board of the happy train. we want to be on board the, you know, positive train. We want people to listen, disconnect for, I don't know, 35, 45, 50 minutes and enjoy and remember and understand why we love the things we love.
Yes, exactly.
I think that was a beautiful statement.
Yay!
If I could say so myself.
All right, guys, on that note, we are going to bring the episode officially to a close. Sophie, thank you so, so much for this beautiful, insightful conversation. Even though it kind of shifted then in a different direction than what we planned, I think we still got a beautiful, very, very on-point conversation. So what we normally do on the show is we kind of let our panelists share their social media handles. So if our screeners want to follow you and want to kind of stay on board what you do, where can they follow you?
Okay. Instagram, it's at S Ghaziri. So that's G-H-A-Z-I-R-I. And I have a YouTube channel as well. So just type in Sophie Ghaziri there. And Sophie is S-O-P-H-I-E. No F's in there, please.
And they can listen to you on another podcast, can they not?
Yes, yes, they can, Alan, yes. They can listen to me on Angami. Alan is my little guru here. And he's the mastermind behind the Levant X podcast. It's completely different from what we're discussing here. It's more on the political side. And if you are in Lebanon and want to tune into Light FM, there'll be a 5-minute show twice a week where we're discussing going back to Had Solo's new comment, which is positive news. You know, let's talk about things that are going right in this world and what people are doing right in this world and giving them a chance to shine, because those bad guys, those non-heroes, we're sick of them. As Alan said, I'm done.
Amen.
You know,
preach, preach. If you guys want to follow me on social media, you can follow me on Instagram at alan.mahana, and
I'm had.solo.
You can also follow Script to Screen on Script to Screen Official. Had, you can say the rest.
Nah, you can follow us on Script to Screen Official. You can check out our website, scripttoscreen.me. Yes, that is a new website. That's totally new, guys. And you can listen to us on any platform you can imagine. So Anghami in the Middle East, Spotify, SoundCloud. I don't know what streaming app.
We're not on SoundCloud, but we are on Google Podcasts. We're on Apple iTunes.
We're not on SoundCloud. You can listen to us not on SoundCloud.
So please,
I just got excited.
It's okay.
I got carried away.
And make sure you subscribe, leave some feedback, some good comments, some good ratings. It'll help us climb the charts in the podcasting world.
Please subscribe to Script to Screen.
Thank you so much for joining us, screeners. Well, and next week, we've got our Halloween special before we hopefully launch the brand new season of an evolved, a more positive, even more positive Script to Screen. So thank you so much for tuning in, screeners. We'll see you next time.